Hey, Josh.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been sick for the last 2 weeks or so, and so I'm finally kind of coming over that, and boy, does it feel good to be healthy again. You know, get a full night's sleep, you know, have a clear head.
Yeah, it's definitely something easy to forget and have your like appreciate your health. I've had a similar thing, but not with colds, but just in terms of like physical ailments, little minor injuries or different things, and just how any of these little we're fragile human setbacks that can just like ruin your mojo, so to speak.
Yeah, so true. How are things with you?
They're good. They're good. I mean, summer's starting to kick off. Pools are opening. Kids are getting out of school soon. Yeah, it's good. Business has been good. Honestly, kind of great. Honestly, so all the little seed things I planted before are sort of working. So it's nice to see. So.
Very good. Good stuff. So, do you have some
How
thoughts
about
of what you're
you?
going to talk
What
about
else is
today?
Yeah, I did have a topic. I was actually going to ask you about your status list things. I remember you posted a couple things about like playing with the pause dates or basically what we alluded to was a nice behavior, which was like people get free signups, free accounts all the time, but sort of I like this general notion. This is kind of keeps recirculating back in my head and actually started from our Chris Savage interview, which was like get people back in the app. It's sort of also one of the North Star metrics of where of our new onboarding emails. We're reworking our onboarding emails, but the whole point is not necessarily to like educate or whatever. It might be wrapped in those types of things, but the whole thing is like get them back in the app. And then it's like the whole idea is like once you'd open that tab, once you get back into an app, how many times have you and I gotten lost in that app because we logged in, right? So like, oh, it's easy to not do anything when you haven't logged in. So anyway, why don't you tell a little bit about what this is? I kind of generalize some of the concepts, but I want to know how that's going and why don't you tell that story?
So I updated or I was looking at that with status list and trying to figure out ways to get people to get back in the app. But also I was looking at my resource usage and I was like, I've got all these free accounts and they are costing me money. And I would like for them to not be free accounts. I would like for them to pay me, or at least a larger proportion of them to pay me. And so, kind of to hit two birds with one stone, I think maybe you had suggested this at one point, or maybe I heard it somewhere. But I've just made it that free accounts have to log in on a certain interval, otherwise their account will be paused. And so, you know, you get an email like 10 days beforehand, you know, one day beforehand, you know, right beforehand saying, hey, here's a link, please log into your dashboard, just to keep your account active. You know, if you don't do this, we're going to pause your uptime monitoring. And so you won't get alerts if your site goes down and that sort of thing. And so I rolled that out last week, sent out, you know, a ton of emails to all the free accounts. And so it is working. It is in progress. Tested it very thoroughly to try and get all the things. And one other thing I did with it too was I in the emails I did a soft sell to say, hey, you can avoid this problem if you get a free paid account. You know, you don't have to log in.
Sure.
And then when they actually do log in, I give a hard sell right after they do the login. I just have like a, you know, a parameter on the login that says like, you know, they came from this re-authenticate thing, and it just, you know, puts this pricing screen right in front of them with the upgrade buttons right there in the app.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, hey, you know, you can avoid this if you're annoyed. But otherwise, if you like
Right.
your free account, you know, carry on kind
It's
of thing.
fine, but you'll have to go through this screen every time.
Well, and I think another thing too, I've kind of purposely done was not to say what the interval is. and not to allude to that, it will continue to happen either. I think I want people to get frustrated on their own terms as opposed to me maybe artificially pushing that on them. I have a feeling that'll make people less cynical and more willing to just go with it. And I also even gave like a little explanation in the email too, to say like, look, we're happy to provide a free service to you, but we need to know that you're active, just to kind of justify it. Right. Because, yeah, you know, there people on free tend to, I think, be a little more vocal about, you know, feeling mistreated around that sort of thing. So just wanted to, you know, make sure there's no real good reasons to, you know, blast me, but you know, whatever.
There's always going to be people that are going to not just have a general entitlement over free products and things like that. And the realization that this is costing you money, you know, whether it's time, attention, other resources. So it's just, no, I think that's great. Are you comfortable sharing any,
any
numbers? So how many emails you sent out or something, or percentages, I don't know, however you feel like sharing.
Yeah. So I sent around 800 emails, over a couple of days. And I think there's probably, last I checked, we're just sending out the 10-day email at this point. So, you know, there's not as much urgency. But immediately I got some replies, which was kind of cool, of people like, you know, asking different questions. So that was really helpful, for me to be like, oh, okay, here's how people are thinking about this. So for example, some people were like, what even is this? And you're like, oh, okay, I got to educate them a little bit on, like, you know, one time you clicked this random button over here on your dashboard and it did this thing. And so, yeah, a small percentage, I'd say like less than 10% have actually completed the login to keep their account. A very small number in the single digit percents have archived their account, like chosen just to get rid of it. And it does seem to be fairly like similar across the board for all of my like traffic sources. So whether that's web or DigitalOcean or Heroku, they all seem to be kind of about the same.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, so I added some extra logging in there just so I can get the metrics really good of like, you know, hey, it seems like after this particular email, you know, more people are completing the action or any of those things. But no upgrades yet. So
that's all right. I mean, again, what I like about this is you put yourself in a position to win regardless of the outcome, right? So you're winning by shedding some accounts that were taking resources that you may or may not have been providing any value to them whatsoever. If they don't even know what this was, you're spending resources on something they actually didn't even care about. So, you know, something you get to kind of chop. I think you did it in a nice way, in a way that also kind of balances again some of that entitlement of free equation. And, you know, did they care? Did they not care? And actually, I just want to stay in touch and have you use the service, because the whole idea is I'd love for you to upgrade sometime. But hey, if you're going to put a little bit of skin in the game, it's not much. Just actually log in. You know, is that so much to ask if you're the poor developer that can't, you know, or afford to that, but then at least have them recognize, you know, some of the value with that. So I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what's really neat about doing that project too, is that you can really see how, like, if you had economies of scale, how this would really like scale out. Like the more numbers you have, the more people you can feed into it. Like, it's kind of neat that like to see that in action, I guess. I just thought it was kind of neat.
And I know one of the biggest things before, you were always frustrated with like, no one ever responds to my emails, like asking for feedback, like, hey, just, I'd love to talk to you. You signed up for something and you're always like, oh, I don't understand. Why do I get so much crickets essentially? And now getting responses out of these, it's sort of like, okay, well now maybe I can get to talk to people, understand their needs a little bit more. Maybe it opens the doors on a conversation, because essentially you're like, if you choose to basically ignore this, like I'm going to essentially assume you're not interested and I shouldn't even provide the free thing for you. So not a big deal. Yep. You don't even have to do any action. Just don't respond. That's cool with me too.
Yeah. It's like the sales email of like, if you don't respond, I'm going to, you know, stop following you. But it's like, this actually has teeth, right? Like it's like.
Right. Or you're actually like, please make good on that because I don't want to respond. And if I don't respond, please carry through with your threat. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, because I'm annoyed by having to send you SMS notifications that are costing me however many cents per.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I also looked at the onboarding flow a little bit too. I got a bit of a spike in signups last week, so I was just kind of exploring where they dropped off.
Right.
And so I did a few minor upgrades to the set up your monitor screen. There seems to be a lot of drop off at that point. So I'm just kind of trying to pick away at different things on status list, see if I can make it a little bit better.
I mean, I still think it's a great opportunity for you because it's sort of just, you could chip away at these little iterative things and, you know, you have enough of a base. Now, maybe you're not going to see instant results of tests and making changes like overnight because you don't have necessarily enough of volume, but over time, as you do these, they're sort of thinking experiments, learning experiments, and just sometimes it's just directionally correct to do some of these things. And it's like, okay, let me stack up these iterative changes, iterative, you know, tactics that are, you know, good for whenever you do have another thing or you start working on something else. You now have some playbooks. You've already done the thought work on it, right?
So, No, I think that's it. Just like learning how to do these things and kind of what it feels like in these different sections of it too. You know, there's always, my instinct is always to rush things out the door and, you know, maybe I'll take a little bit longer on this, you know, get it right. And some of those things.
Right. Right. So speaking of learning, sort of what I've been doing and the topic I wanted to cover more today was, I've been venturing outside the normal tech, podcast.
Okay.
Listening, if that makes sense. I've come across, so I wanted to talk about like three different, either podcasts and or episodes that I've been on. So one, serendipitously came across this, one called the Uncensored CMO.
Okay.
Which is interesting because it's a guy, I think he's in London and he is, you know, a CMO or had been a previous CMO and kind of not 100% sure what his active role is today, but enough experience and enough things that make it really interesting. So in terms of a lot of the things that it's not B2B. It's like kind of a mix. I think he's done some B2B stuff, but he's a little bit more broad marketing minded. I would say he gets good interview guests and oftentimes almost leans into more like brand campaigns and brand marketing stuff. I think most of us are less familiar of. We're always thinking about like conversion. We're thinking about the term more demand capture than necessarily like creating demand or creating awareness, right? So we're thinking SEO. We're thinking all these ones where we just want to hunt where people in the pond where the fish are, so to speak. Not necessarily like trying to attract fish to our pond or, you know, a broader brand messaging and things about brand and values and other things that sort of keep you top of mind, at least at some point, you know, and understanding that people aren't always in a buying cycle, but how do you become remembered, right?
Yeah. He's got a wide variety of things on here. Just like scanning through the episodes here, he's got like some founder, like some guy from a bank, and then he's got like, you know, Liquid Death, the water brand.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of it is a little more on brand campaigns and stuff, which makes it is again where I started with it. It's outside of my normal sphere, and I'm really enjoying it. There's a lot of they talked about the emotional impact a lot of these brand campaigns. The two I wanted to point out that I thought were really fun was there's one about spec savers, if you listen to that one. And okay. There's this other one about using a brand mascot or a character. And the reason I bring these two up, spec savers was interesting because I didn't know what it was. The only pretext I'm giving you when you listen to this is he's from London. So like a lot of the things are, most of his guests are a little more UK oriented. So some mm-hmm. of these brands I'm not familiar with, right? So right. Spec Savers is apparently this very big, glasses company. And it's like, they have stores mm-hmm. and their whole brand campaign. And it's been around for like 50 years is just this, you know, quippy little line, kind of sort of like, you know, Geico and these like, you know, the Gecko and different things, but it's like, should have gone to Spec Savers. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What is this? But what's interesting to me is like, when I'm listening to these episodes, I'm often trying to understand the context because I'm not familiar. My only critique to him would be like, present a little of that more upfront for the non-UK people. Like, it's just assuming people are familiar with Spec Savers. But you get it. You grok it as you go through the episodes.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was talking about like really long-lasting brand campaigns, like 50-year brand campaigns, and the way that you can mix creatives into it. They had an episode for the Spec Savers one where essentially they had like a package delivery guy, you know, going up, all these flights of stairs in a building, and he gets to the top of the stairs where he's supposed to deliver the package. And the woman opens the door and essentially goes like, oh, you're supposed to be in building B. This is building A. And he's like, and of course, then the line is, should have gone to Spec Savers. It's like, cause he was fumbling with his glasses. So it's like the layers they play with that. And if you listen to the episode, they talk about all these classic campaigns that they've run. So a lot of these are broader than my normal B2B tech sphere. Mm-hmm. They culturally get out of our heads. And then in addition to going across B2C, mm-hmm. They do talk about some B2B stuff. They actually bring in like a brand person from MailChimp and some other things. So there's a laundry list of episodes. So the other That's one really I cool. want to talk real quick, which was they had this one on a character on Barry the Beaver. So I won't go into much detail that one, but take a look at that one. It was sort of like, how do you use a, you know, mascot or a character as a personification of your brand or what you're trying to get across? That one's really interesting because they talk about positioning and they talk about market trends and what this company was trying to do because it's selling a certain type of
craft beer.
I think whiskey. But and then I didn't even after I listened to the episode, then I went looking on YouTube for like to see some of the commercials and they're awesome. And it's like it's some of these things where it's like, okay, can I actually do some of these things in today's day and age? I was like, maybe we can, but it's almost easier. You can run micro campaigns, you know, through YouTube on, you know, if Rock is to have a television ad, like it's kind of getting my juices flowing on this brand campaign type of stuff.
So I have often like it sounds like you're really enjoying like the different sort of way that these people look at marketing, right? Like because they have a very different working space, and I've really enjoyed that too. Like I have another podcast that I enjoy listening to that has like very like B2C and a lot of that sort of stuff in it. But I'm curious though, like do you think it's actually applicable to Referral Rock, or do you think that this is just kind of a good way to get the creative juices flowing? Like in sense that like a lot of these B2C playbooks, like for instance, television ads, like that's a very different kettle of fish than, you know, targeting your B2B world, right?
I don't think so. I think there is a lot to apply and to learn, and not just from the creative inspiration side. Mostly because probably the style and probably why I like this guy is like it gets down to core elements. Like they get down to like why these things work, right? So it's not. So it's almost like they bring an example. They're oftentimes bringing in the person that created the campaign, and they're talking about behind the scenes of how they created it, what the impact of what was the intent, and then understanding all of the sort of code behind it all, so to speak. Like, why does this actually work, right? It's not just like we threw, you know, things against the wall and just seeing what sticks. But it was interesting in that manner that they were talking about that, because for me, it unpacks that, or I also get to like try to draw the lines together. Like when they talked about the Barry the Beaver one, they talked about other brand characters. They talked about, you know, the Geico Gecko. I think they talked about different, all kinds of other ones. They talked about, mostly because I think I went back and listened to some of the episodes, but you can see where his brain has gone, because he had an episode interviewing, like the brand VP, the VP of brand at Salesforce. And they were talking about Einstein and that character. And I think he's brought that up in any time they've talked about characters. So then it also led me to go, ooh, does he have an episode on that? Let me go go deeper to that. So then these little tangents of talking about, you know, characters and why they work and the personification of how they affect the brand and things like that. So,
yeah. But I guess like in the B2B world, like there does seem to be a different, there's a different workflow for the purchase decision, right? And so I wonder if some of these things have different effects than they do in the B2C world. So for instance, like DigitalOcean has like their shark or their whale or whatever it is that's always on everything. But that's not the reason I buy from them, or at least I would like to say that. It's, you know, there's pricing factor figures into it, and like basic requirements really figure into it. And I think that's often what I've heard from other people in B2B is like, you know, things like color and whatnot, and some of that stuff is, it makes difference if you have a direct competitor, like if you are doing these things and they are not, but that it doesn't have quite the same effect that it does in the B2C world.
I mean, I won't go into all of this stuff, but at the same time, like listening to any of these, they also talk about, like color doesn't matter anymore, right?
Right.
So if you want something interesting where my headspace has gone because of this. So this is like examples of it, but do you know of do you ever listen? I think we talked about Pep's podcast, How to Win. So like he recently rebooted his podcast to be more solo episodes. At that point of when that happens, go back and start and listen to when his first one is. It's probably like 5-6 weeks ago. I think he's been releasing one a week.
Okay.
I haven't listened to the last few, but the first three in that series, like take a listen to that, because they talk about like being in the consideration set. They talk about 95% of buyers being out of market, like not in a buying like motion, right? So if you think about these things, it becomes more like, wow, there's so much to do in this brand space and this like before someone is ready to buy, how do you become in their consideration set? How are you like next time you're looking for a service provider, you're like, oh yeah, DigitalOcean, they do this thing. I didn't have a need, but now I do. And now they're going to be on at least my short list of things I'm evaluating.
Right.
So it's more of that conceptually. And they're really just saying like, I won't give you recap all of that, but listen to that. And it really and I do believe this stuff transcends B2B or B2C. The biggest difference in B2B to me is, well, one, I hate the term B2B. Well, that's a whole other episode. Mostly because it's just way too broad and is really your business model. It's not, has anything to do with your customers per se.
Okay.
So, but anyway, it's, listen to that. And that's kind of where my headspace has been going lately in terms of thinking about brand. Mm-hmm. So for me, based off of that and based off of where we are as a business at this stage for Referral Rock, because I think we've already the demand capture. So anyone that is in market looking for referral software, I feel like we're going to be able to be in that conversation. But the ones we aren't going to be in are the ones that somehow they know of another company and we're never even on their evaluation list. They never even searched in Google for it. They never that type of thing. So those are the people that I can't reach. And without being a bigger brand out there and being out there before they need it, and not necessarily selling us, but just planting the idea of us and what we do differently, but not pushing them into a buying motion, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. No, and that's really helpful to hear that too, because I think in the past I've, you know, enjoyed going into some of these broader wells of marketing ideas and things like that. And, you know, that's often where like the questions I'm asking are because I've struggled with this. And so I think that's really helpful. But you had a couple more too.
I'll kind of zip through those a little bit faster because I do want to get into the sort of like process I've developed around like how I'm processing the learning from these podcasts and things like that. So the next one I have, which sort of went into this. I don't think I've ever heard Gary Vee before. I know people talk about some of these like marketing guru people, and I hear the names, but usually they just seem kind of skeevy to me. So I just, I don't seek out to listen, but I knew of them. Yeah. We talk about brand awareness, right? I never actually listened, but I had this sort of image in my head of what they are. So Gary Vee was recently on the Marketing Against the Grain podcast, and it's a fantastic interview. So if you have the time, go listen to that one too. And part of the stuff they're talking about, he's talking about just this age and this process. Like he released a new book, but the whole general idea of it is like test things organically on social media, especially for brands, and anything that already, it's kind of this nail and scale mentality. It's like anything that has legs organically through the algorithm, like those are the ads you want to put your money behind and like boost them and then take them. And why did they work? Then break them down and create more ad creatives. Like that's your canary in the coal mine, right? That's your like little signal through the noise. Don't go this other route of like doing these big brand campaigns and then falling flat. Like you already know they work. So don't worry about repeating yourself, but either put ad dollars behind those exact campaigns or use those to decouple, like, so take a lot of shots, figure out what works, and then just sort of double down on those things. And that's it in a nutshell, but he, you know, there's a lot of other stuff in that episode as well.
Yeah. I think I've heard of someone doing that, maybe from his suggestion, I'm not sure, but they did something where they would like post on Twitter because they had a very small audience on Twitter. And that's where they would do their like shotgun style testing. And then they would take the best ones over to LinkedIn. And then on LinkedIn, they'd test out the organic on that. And then if it worked, then they would put it into ads. And I forget who it was now, but they seemed to do pretty well with that. That seemed to work quite well for them.
I think I've heard Pep say he does that. So if you've heard on any of his, that might be, right? He tests, he posts more often and just more off the cuff on Twitter, and then the good stuff that performs, he brings it to LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I've heard of other people, again, doing similar types of things as well. But again, it's like, you know, it goes back to that whole, it's funny, it goes back to that, I think what, you know, people complain like, oh, what should have been an email could have been a social media post. What could have been like a social media post could have been a text. You know, all these things like laddering up to the smallest little iteration.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's like, what can you have this great amount of research or great amount of like this algorithm is basically like free testing. Now, the challenge is all these people have an audience, so they have enough of ones to have enough people there to test. It's not something everyone could run, but maybe you're putting ad dollars behind them. I don't know. There's ways to do it.
I would quibble with that because I like when I was doing testing taxi, I definitely did that where I would test like different ways of talking about things. And when I found something that resonated, I would use that on my landing page. And there's like, I started from nothing on LinkedIn, and like within a couple months, I had a fairly decent group of people that would regularly read my posts. So, I think it is possible.
And then the last episode or the last podcast I listened to, I think I was telling you a little bit before the before our call, where Jason Cohen was being interviewed by Craig Hewitt on the Rogue Startups podcast, and that was the one I listened to this weekend. And I really enjoyed that as well. And one of the things I really liked about it was, you know, Jason kept going to this framework, which was like, you know, finding, basically checking these three boxes of strategic things you should be doing. It's like, does it bring you joy? Are you skilled at it? And is there a business need? Mm. And it's interesting throughout the episode, because he did call out indie hackers a bit. He's like, hey, they might be living in this joy and skill world where it's like business need. Like, do you need to create another product or another, like, you know, another little idea and whatever? And it leaned heavily on those. Like, he's like, hey, if that's your thing, that's your thing. That's fine. I'm not taking it away. Yeah. But if you want to grow a business, like, you know, the business need maybe to get more customers for the existing product you already built. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not that exciting to you, but, you know,
yeah,
kind of coming to terms with understanding that that might be the actual limiting factor, not necessarily, I got to just keep creating more products. And again, yeah, he did it in such a way that he's like not dogging on anyone for, hey, how they're doing the things, but just sort of painting this, hey, there's this rubric here that you should think about. And, and that may help you, you know, whether that changes your mindset today or not. But overall, it was a really, really strong episode with that, because Craig also was like leaning into certain questions he had. And it was honestly, a fantastic interview, because it just went all over the place. But also, you just had these very, I don't know, the way they discussed on both sides. So.
Yeah, cool. I'll have to give that one a listen. I think that's so spot on, right? Like, you got a bit of that artificial inflation from venture and seed funds, right? Where it's just someone that doesn't have as much skin in the game is kind of saying, oh, I think you're going to go somewhere, as opposed to like actual business need from real customers. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. Definitely take a listen. But what's interesting is I've always had this idea for an app, again, to scratch my own itch. It's probably not a real one. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before. It's possible, because it's in my like bank of ideas that I'll probably never do. but it was this whole idea of a podcast like super app. So sort of this whole something that honestly, if someone said it could do all these things, like, would you pay $1,000 for this app? I'd probably be like, yeah, sure. Like, if it does all these things, I will pay $1,000 for this app, like a mobile app, right?
Yeah.
Which is, we're often talking about how we learn, right? And oftentimes I would be listening to the podcast and I just want to take notes, but I'm like walking, or I want to be like, hey, that last 30 seconds, like, note to self about this, like listening to that Gary Vee episode, like that is something I want to do, or I want to send to my marketing assistant or whatever else. And as I'm listening and as I'm doing these listening tours across, let's, you know, all the episodes I talked about today, like, now how do I put them into action? How do I put them into Josh's library or project management list of like priorities or stuff away for later when I get to the idea of trying to make a referral rock character, like these different things. And I was like, there just needs to be an app that is a listening natively and a podcast listening app. Cause I think we both talked about constant frustration between, especially us as Android users, like,
yeah,
I don't know, other Apple users. You know, they closed down Google Podcasts. I now listen on Spotify, sometimes YouTube Music, but mostly Spotify now. But it's still meant for music mostly, so it's not ideal. But I was like, there needs to be a podcast listening app for the, like, super podcast app listener, like a, you know, superhuman for podcast listeners that are really looking to learn from it and bake it into their flow. So,
yeah. Well, I think that's really interesting. I guess my first thing is like trying to think of like who would actually use it, right? It's got to be these people that care about learning and
nerds like us.
Yeah. And like selling learning products is like really high churn, right? Like that is tough stuff. I think it would be a really fun technical thing to do. I think that'd be cool, but to get people to actually buy it.
That checks nice. That checks your joy box and skill oh, yeah. box. Now, business need, it may not check that box.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, I think you and I are kind of special in that way, that we want to like keep track of these things. We want to like, you know, have a process to get better. I think right. a lot of people are unwilling or unwilling to do that.
Right. I did think it may make a business need for Craig. I actually talked to Craig Hewitt about it, who runs Castos, right? Like the podcast hosting service. And again, he's going to know so much better than me if this is a real thing, but I'm like, ooh, if you had this app, like maybe there is a group of early, like you have these podcast nerds like you and me that are like learning and listening all the time. Obviously we already have a podcast, but could I make a quick podcast and maybe it's like about just my commentary on an existing podcast? Like that'd be the easiest way to sort of to start a podcast. And maybe like if you had this app and then it's a great power tool for power podcast listeners.
Yeah.
And if they don't have a podcast themselves, or maybe it's a quick way to like remix existing podcasts and be like, Gary V said this. Actually, you know what I think? Da, 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 da. Or here's the questions I'd ask him. And like, can that turn into some sort of like, you know, published podcast and almost like take the, it's like that notion where people go, sometimes the best posts of LinkedIn and Twitter and stuff come from you responding to a comment because you're in it. And then it's like, you know what? I'm going to write the full version of that post later. And it does well because it's already like close to the audience, if that makes sense.
Right. You could like almost build like a social network around podcasts, right? I bet you someone's tried that. Like
I'm sure they have.
That would make so much sense for someone like I think like Overcast or something like that, where they have all the ad stuff set up and the payment set up. And so they could really just go to all of their podcast producers and just say, hey, we'll pay you 50 cents to put this like pre-roll ad in, and you've already got pre-roll ads, so you don't care. Or like, you know, even all these small podcasts and capture all the long tail. I think that would be the right play for that app. Like if you're a podcast hosting provider and this is a marketing tool basically for you, and if it doesn't go anywhere, at the very least you got some marketing juice out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he knows a lot. They know a lot more. We're sort of armchair quarterbacks on their businesses. But anyway, but what's funny is then I've now shortcutted my own idea into using AI tools. So all these ones I've talked about, which is funny, recently, probably over the past like 2 weeks, at the same time, I've been, you know, trying to use more AI stuff internally at our business, like whether it's like, hey, you know, it might come from, like it started with simple things where I'm like, hey, I sent a recording for a process that I wanted involved with the team on how to do certain, like a new checklist for blog posts. And I made a little Asana video, and then there's the transcription in there, and I sent it off to, you know, my marketing assistant. And then I'm like, let me just cut and paste that transcript into ChatGPT and these things and just say, like, write me a checklist SOP out of this. And it was pretty good. I was like, okay, so now if I take this power part of, I don't mind talking about the thing, or I'm just walking through, and it couldn't even see the screens, right? I'm talking through a screenshot. So it's like, there's a lot of missing information that's inferred, but I just literally just took the transcript, because the video automatically added a transcript when I recorded it, and just dumped it in. And then it's like, oh, wow, that was pretty amazing. So then I thought about the podcast, and I'm like, how can I get these in? I'm like, okay, do I have to, you know, can I just, hey, ChatGPT, can you like go listen to this episode, pull out the insights, give me a checklist SOP out of this Gary V episode, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I can't do that. I can't get the internet. I can't do this. And it's like, oh, these things are supposed to be multimodal. What's the deal? So my recent hack has been all the podcasts that I mentioned also published to YouTube. You go into YouTube, you hit expand comments.
Yeah.
It has the transcription.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying for a transcription service for this. I don't have to process it through Descript, cut and paste myself. So then I just cut and paste that go into ChatGPT and then say, write me a checklist for these things. And I just add like, here's the transcript, dump it in there. And then after it does its thing, and then I'm like, actually the area I want you to lean more into is like Gary V's thing. I'm like, I don't care about this, this, and this. So eliminate those ones, but go deeper on this process. Cause he actually did this one about, you know, micro ICPs or something like that. And I couldn't even remember. He said something about micro ICPs. Can you get all the details of the different ICPs he was describing? And I don't even have to go like, what minute is it or anything? And it pulled it all out. And I'm like, so this,
that is clever.
Post Josh listening to podcast process. I'm now even dead on the whole app idea now. But after doing this, I was like, now what have I done myself? And now I'm back into like, okay, this is my process. Now, not everyone's going to do all these steps, but, you know, could you make it so that you combine, like basically what I did, could you shortcut that for the masses? So it's just sort of like, I listened to this episode. Here are the standard things I asked. Here's what I thought was important. Now give me some, like a checklist list so I can store for later and reference the episode, reference the transcript, and reference whatever ChatGPT is telling me. So when I am ready to pick up this project, I have this like canned, succinct like approach right there.
Yeah. And I think I could see other use cases on that too. Like if someone had a slightly different process than you, you know, you could make it basically like a, I don't know, like a command or a quick command, quick data access for podcasting based on your history.
Right.
And that would also feed nicely into like the, you could do something where you say, oh, you can listen for free on the app. But like, if you want to search, that's when we're going to start paywalling things. You know, you can. That's interesting.
So, I mean, who knows? I mean, right now, at least that for this rate is like, I don't know how many people do this type of thing or would benefit from this. Yeah. So, you know, for now, I'm just going to probably go, oh, I really like that episode. That was enough of a signal for me. Hopefully it's on YouTube and I do my transcript thing. If it's not, and at the worst case, I'm like seeing if they have a transcription somewhere, which I think a lot of these podcast apps are doing automatic transcriptions. So then just do it that way. Right. So
Even transcription's pretty cheap.
Yes. So at the worst, I'm putting it into, you know, dropping it into a transcript thing.
Fun things to think about. I think I need some time to think about that. If there's other ways that it could work. At this point, I'm thinking like, this sounds hard to sell, but it seems interesting.
And for me, I'm not even thinking about it as an app to sell now. It's just more of like,
cool.
You know, is this cool? Like, and I'm getting immediate value out of it, right? So maybe it's me just maybe at the is it worth my time at some point to just be like, you know, I'll build a little receiver app for my phone. It's not even have to be approved by the app store. It's like just, you know, it's developed by me. And all it does is take the share thing. So I say share an episode.
Yeah.
It can go look up YouTube. It can go try to find the transcript. If not, pulls in the thing and then asks my questions and like drops it in my Asana. So like, I would be more thinking, what could I do to sort of give me that thing? Because to me, it has a super high value. Yeah. Now, is it worth me building it? No. But is it worth me just making my process like even easier? So I'm just giving an emoji thumbs up to an episode and boom, it happens. That'd be cool.
Yeah. That's really cool. Really cool.
So anyway, this was a little bit of a longer episode. So but definitely the tech out, you know, Pep's episode stuff, this uncensored CMO. That Gary V episode wasn't bad, and awfully, and that Jason Cohen episode with Rogue Startups. But anyway, that's where my brain's been.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for chatting today, Josh. This was a lot of fun.
All right, man. I will talk to you later. Thanks, Nate.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher, and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 Years to 22 MRR and Zombie Startups. Or episode 30, Review Sites Are a Necessary Evil and Hacks to Get Around Them. Thanks again.